Wow. You know, you really stumble across some cases that just that they make you rethink things. And this People v. Tsen case, it's one of those. It really is, because it's not your average malpractice suit. It goes way beyond that. You know, we're talking about a doctor actually convicted of murder because of how she prescribed opioids. And that's, I mean, that's
It
huge.
is, and it's a very unusual situation.
So we're going to do a deep dive into this whole thing, this ruling, what it means, you know, especially for folks who are interested in the whole, you know, the world where law and medicine kind of bump up against each other. We're going to look at the, you know, the actual court documents themselves. We've got some legal analysis, a case brief on People v. Tsen. So let's jump right in.
Yeah, absolutely. The 2018 People v. Tsen decision is it really is a landmark case. And like you said, it is unusual to see a physician facing these kinds of criminal charges for actions they took in their professional role. Dr. Tsen's conviction, it was for second-degree murder. And that really set it apart from your typical civil medical negligence claim.
Okay, so help us understand this. What exactly happened? What did Dr. Tseng do that led to this, I mean, really extreme outcome in the legal system?
Well, the details of the case, they're pretty troubling. Dr. Tsen, she had this clinic, and around 2010, it really started developing this reputation as a place where you could go and pretty easily get opioid prescriptions.
Easy access.
Yeah, easy access and often without even really getting a thorough exam.
Okay, so right away that raises flags, right? It's like, wait a minute, that doesn't sound like how it's supposed to work. So what kind of prescribing practices are we talking about here? Give us like paint the picture.
Reports show that she wasn't spending a whole lot of time with her patients. The exams were really quick. She didn't really look into their medical histories or, you know, what other medications they might have been taking. And yet she was prescribing these very high doses of opioids, often combined with other things too, like sedatives and muscle relaxants.
It's like a recipe for disaster.
It is. And a lot of these patients, they were clearly showing signs of drug-seeking behavior.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, this whole thing, it contributed to the larger opioid crisis that we've seen.
And I mean, it wasn't like nobody was saying anything. It's not like nobody was like waving a red flag.
There were definitely warnings. For example, pharmacies, they started getting concerned, and some of them even refused to fill her prescriptions because they were so far outside of normal medical practice. And then, you know, you also had coroner's reports that started linking patient deaths, overdoses, directly back to medications that she was prescribing.
So the evidence was mounting.
It was, and yet her prescribing patterns, they didn't really change.
So that's beyond just making a mistake or two. It really suggests a kind of a an indifference. It almost sounds callous.
It really does. And what makes it even worse is that she kept prescribing these dangerous combinations even after some of her patients had died
Oh my God.
from overdoses that were linked to her prescriptions. And then on top of that, there's evidence that came out at the trial that suggested she was actually altering medical
To
records.
cover her tracks.
Yeah, presumably to try to hide her liability after these deaths.
So the legal system had this really tough question to figure out. Was this just a case of really bad, you know, medical malpractice, or did it cross the line into something criminal, specifically murder? How did the courts even start to make sense of that distinction?
Yeah, that's the really key legal question at the heart of this whole case. Where do you draw that line between negligence, which is usually handled in civil court, and the level of intent that you need for a criminal conviction, something like murder? And in this case, the prosecution argued, and the court ultimately agreed, that Dr. Cheng's actions met the requirements for second-degree murder because of this legal concept called implied malice.
Implying malice. That's a term I think we need to dig into a little bit. So what does that mean, especially in this context?
So for second-degree murder based on implied malice, the prosecution had to show that Dr. Cheng knew that her actions were likely to cause death or at least serious injury, and that she acted with a conscious disregard for human life. So it's not about specifically wanting someone to die. It's about being so reckless and understanding that death is a possible outcome that it shows you just don't care about human life.
So it's less about, like, you know, I want this person dead, and more about, I know this could kill someone, but I don't care enough to stop.
Yes, that's a really good way to put it. And that's what makes Pipulveet Singh so important.
Right.
Because she was a doctor, the court said she had this special understanding of the risks that come with prescribing these powerful opioids.
Right, because of her training.
Exactly. So her medical expertise became a key part of proving that she was subjectively aware. She knew that death was a real possibility.
So someone who's not a doctor, they might not fully grasp how dangerous it is to mix high doses of opioids with other sedatives.
Right.
But a physician, they should.
They absolutely should.
So how did the court get to the conclusion that she actually knew the risks and wasn't just, you know, incredibly incompetent or negligent?
Well, they pointed to a lot of evidence from the trial.
Okay.
There were the warnings from the pharmacies
right.
about how dangerous her prescriptions were. There were the coroner's reports directly linking those prescriptions to patient deaths from overdoses.
Mm. And then there's the fact that she actually put alerts in some patients' files specifically about overdose deaths.
So she couldn't claim ignorance.
No. All of this showed that she was very much aware that what she was doing could kill people.
Hmm.
But even with that knowledge, she didn't change her prescribing habits. And then you add in those allegations about her changing medical records after the deaths.
Trying to cover up. Yeah, that really underlines the idea that she knew what was going on and was trying to hide it.
Now, there's also the legal question of whether those prescriptions were the direct cause of the deaths.
Right.
Couldn't the defense argue that, you know, maybe these patients had other health problems or they were already using drugs and that breaks the chain of causation?
It did. The defense did bring up those arguments,
okay.
saying that maybe the patient's past drug use or other things meant that there wasn't that direct link between what Dr. Tseng did and their deaths.
Mm.
But the court didn't buy it. They said that Dr. Tseng's prescriptions were a substantial factor in the deaths. Meaning that her prescriptions didn't have to be the only cause,
okay.
but that they directly and significantly contributed to those fatal overdoses.
I see.
Expert testimony during the trial backed that up.
Okay.
It showed that the overdoses probably wouldn't have happened without her prescriptions, even if there were other things going on.
So even if a patient had a history of drug use, if Dr. Tseng's reckless prescribing significantly increased their risk of dying
right.
and contributed to their death, then she could still be held responsible.
Exactly. The court was focused on whether her actions made death more likely, and the evidence was pretty clear that they did.
Okay, so that brings us to this four-part test.
Right.
That kind of came out of the Pipulveet Singh ruling.
Yeah.
For figuring out implied malice in cases like this where it's a medical professional.
Yeah.
What are those four elements?
Okay, so the court laid out these four key parts. The first one is expert knowledge.
Okay.
The defendant, in this case Dr. Tseng, they have to have understood the risks, the deadly risks involved.
Because of their training.
Right, because of their medical training and their specific knowledge about how strong opioids are and how dangerous they can be.
Okay.
The second part is gross deviation from the standard of care.
Okay.
So what they were doing, their prescribing practices, had to be way outside of what's considered normal, acceptable medical practice.
Okay.
This could include things like not giving proper exams.
Right.
Not checking medical histories. Prescribing dangerous drug combinations without a real medical reason.
Mm-hmm.
The third piece is subjective awareness of risk.
Okay.
So the evidence has to show that they actually knew, the doctor in this case, knew that what they were doing could likely cause death or serious harm.
Right.
And this was supported, like we talked about, by those pharmacy warnings, the coroner's reports, the alerts she put in the files herself.
Right. So there was that subjective knowledge.
Yes.
Yes.
And then the last part is conscious disregard for human life.
Okay.
So despite knowing the risks, they kept doing it. They kept those dangerous prescribing practices going even after people died, and in this case, maybe even tried to cover it up.
So it's a really high bar.
Yeah.
To prove all that, it's not enough to just show negligence,
yep.
even really bad negligence.
Yeah.
For a murder conviction, the prosecution has to prove
yeah.
that the doctor knew their actions were very likely to kill someone, and they just kept going anyway.
Right. It shows a total disregard for human life.
It's a bleak thought, but it's really important to understand.
It is.
So, you know, it makes you wonder about the bigger picture, right? Like,
yeah.
how could this go on for so long?
Right.
The case briefs mentions that some of the judges had opinions about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Justices Cheney and Bendix, they agreed with the majority decision to uphold the murder convictions.
Okay.
But they wrote their own opinions, too.
Hmm.
to point out that there were some serious systemic problems in the way prescriptions are monitored, both by pharmacies and by state medical boards.
So those systems weren't really working the way they should.
They weren't. And they felt like if those systems had been better, if there had been better oversight,
right,
then maybe someone would have caught what Dr. Chen was doing and stopped it.
Before it was too late.
Yeah. Before it led to so many deaths.
So it's not just about individual accountability.
No.
It's also about the responsibility of the systems that are supposed to protect public health.
Exactly. It raises the question of how we can make those systems stronger so something like this doesn't happen again.
So all of this, this People v. Chang ruling, it has big implications.
Huge implications.
Why is this case so important for everyone listening to understand?
Well, it sets a precedent.
Yeah.
It sends a very clear message. Professionals, especially doctors, who have the power to prescribe things that can kill people, they can be held criminally responsible for their actions. It's not just about facing a lawsuit for malpractice.
Right. This is criminal.
Yeah. And after this ruling, courts are probably going to look a lot more closely at a doctor's intent. What they were thinking, in cases where people are seriously hurt or die because of medical treatment, this case really could expand the possibility of criminal charges in the medical field in these really bad situations.
So let's talk about people who are already doctors or who are studying to become doctors.
Right.
What should they take away from this?
For them, the message is very clear.
Yeah.
They have to follow the standard of care when they're prescribing medications.
Absolutely.
This case shows just how serious the consequences can be if they don't.
Yeah.
If they ignore those standards and they don't care about the safety of their patients, they could face criminal charges. The power to prescribe strong medications, it comes with a huge responsibility.
And what about the legal folks out there?
Yeah.
Those who are interested in criminal law or medical law.
Well, for them, People v. Chen provides a roadmap. It shows how to prove implied malice in cases where someone in a position of trust, like a doctor, causes harm by being reckless.
Mm.
They have to show not only that the person went way outside of what's considered professional, but also that they knew they were putting people at risk and they ignored that risk.
It's a lot to prove.
It is. But this case shows it can be done.
Okay, so to sum it all up,
yeah.
What's the key takeaway from our deep dive into People v. Chang?
The key takeaway is that recklessness, especially when you have the power to prescribe dangerous drugs like opioids, can have serious legal consequences.
Yeah.
And those consequences can include being convicted of murder. The People v. Chang case is a powerful example of that. It shows that when a doctor has expert knowledge, they violate the standard of care, they know what they're doing is dangerous, and they just don't care. Mm-hmm. The legal system will hold them accountable.
And that brings us to a final thought for our listeners today.
Okay.
Thinking about those systemic issues that the judges mentioned, what do you think? What are the biggest responsibilities of those regulatory bodies?
Mm-hmm.
Like medical boards, pharmacy oversight, even the government.
Right.
To stop things like this from happening again. How do we balance access to the medications people need with protecting them from harm?
Oh, it's a tough question.
Yeah.
A really important one. And People v. Chang definitely makes us think about it.
It does. It does.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us for this deep dive. It's been heavy stuff, but important.
It really is. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And to our listeners, keep those questions coming. Keep those conversations going. This is what it's all about.
Absolutely.
I'll see you next time.